Welcome back to This Week in Heart Rate Variability. I'm Matt Bennett, and this is the show where we go deep into the peer-reviewed literature to bring you the most current and consequential research on heart rate variability. What it measures, what it predicts, and what it means for the clinicians, coaches, researchers, and practitioners who work with it every day. Before we get into this week's research, a quick reminder. Everything we discuss here is drawn directly from the scientific literature and is intended for educational purposes. This is not medical advice. Please consult qualified healthcare professionals for any clinical decisions. This week, we have 5 studies across a genuinely wide range of territory, and together they paint a picture of how far the field has come in applying heart rate variability to real-world problems, and how much careful methodological work remains to be done. We are looking at artificial intelligence-based sleep staging using heart rate variability features, a short-term heart rate variability screening tool for pre-driving fatigue, an evaluation of a newer entropy measure called bubble entropy, and how it stacks up against established complexity metrics, a deep learning approach to mortality risk prediction that extends multi-scale characterization of heart rate variability, and finally, a detailed look at spectral features of heart rate variability during sleep in Williams syndrome, a genetic condition with well-documented cardiovascular and autonomic involvement. 5 studies spanning sleep medicine, transportation safety, signal processing methodology, cardiac mortality, and developmental neuroscience. Let's take them in sequence. We begin with a study that sits at the intersection of 2 areas of active development in biomedical research, automated sleep analysis and artificial intelligence-based physiological signal processing. Sleep staging, the classification of sleep into its constituent stages, including wakefulness, light sleep, slow wave sleep, and rapid eye movement sleep, has traditionally required polysomnography conducted in a supervised clinical setting. Polysomnography is the gold standard. It simultaneously captures brain electrical activity via electroencephalography, eye movements via electrooculography, muscle tone via electromyography, respiratory effort, oxygen saturation, and heart rhythm throughout an entire night of sleep. It is also expensive, time-consuming, accessible only in specialized facilities, and burdensome enough for patients that many individuals who might benefit from formal sleep evaluation never receive it. A single overnight polysomnographic study requires a patient to travel to a sleep laboratory, sleep away from home, with a head covered in electroencephalography electrodes and a chest covered in sensors, and submit to a night of recording that is rarely a representative sample of their normal sleep. The logistical barriers are real, and they mean that clinical polysomnography tends to be reserved for cases where the diagnostic question is specific and serious, such as the investigation of suspected sleep apnea, narcolepsy, or parasomnias, rather than for the broader characterization of sleep quality that might benefit a much wider population. These practical limitations have driven substantial and sustained research interest in finding ways to infer sleep architecture from simpler, more accessible signals. The electrocardiogram, which can be recorded continuously from a chest patch, a wrist sensor, or a smartwatch-style device, has attracted considerable attention as a potential surrogate because it captures beat-to-beat variation in heart rate that reflects autonomic nervous system activity during sleep. If the autonomic signatures of different sleep stages are sufficiently distinctive to be computationally distinguished from the cardiac signal alone, a substantial simplification in sleep monitoring becomes possible. The logic underlying this approach is biologically grounded. The autonomic nervous system, which comprises the sympathetic and parasympathetic branches, regulates both sleep stage transitions and cardiac function. As sleep progresses through its stages throughout the night, the balance between sympathetic and parasympathetic activity shifts in characteristic ways, leaving measurable signatures in the heart rate variability signal. Rapid eye movement sleep, the stage associated with vivid dreaming, memory consolidation, and emotional processing, is characterized by reduced parasympathetic dominance and greater sympathetic activity relative to slow wave sleep. The deeper stages of non-rapid eye movement sleep, particularly slow wave sleep, show progressive parasympathetic predominance and suppressed sympathetic tone. These autonomic signatures are reflected in time domain measures like the root mean square of successive differences between consecutive beats, in frequency domain measures that distinguish the high frequency band associated with respiratory sinus arrhythmia from the lower frequency oscillations linked to baroreceptor and thermoregulatory activity, and in nonlinear measures of cardiac complexity and regularity. If those autonomic signatures are sufficiently distinct and consistent across individuals, they should in principle be classifiable from heart rate variability features alone, without the need for electroencephalographic recordings. This study was published in the National Medical Journal of India and is titled Artificial Intelligence-Based Automated Sleep Staging, Using Heart Rate Variability, Assessment of Performance and Clinical Prospects. The authors are Subhadeep Chakraborty, Manish Goyal, Paritosh Goyal, and Priyadarshini Mishra. The team identified two specific technical problems that prior work in this space had not fully resolved, and they designed their methodological approach explicitly to address both. The first problem is signal quality. Heart rate variability computation requires accurate detection of R peaks in the electrocardiogram, the sharp deflections that mark ventricular depolarization and define each heartbeat, and precise calculation of the intervals between successive beats. When these intervals are contaminated, the derived heart rate variability metrics become unreliable in ways that can be difficult to detect without careful inspection. Ectopic beats, abnormal beats originating outside the sinoatrial node, such as premature ventricular contractions or premature atrial contractions, introduce intervals that are not reflective of normal sinus node regulation and will corrupt the heart rate variability signal if not identified and corrected. A single premature ventricular contraction, for example, shortens the interval preceding it and lengthens the interval following it, and both aberrant intervals will be included in time domain and nonlinear metrics if the beat is not corrected. Motion artifact during sleep, electrode displacement, and signal dropout introduce similar distortions. Many prior studies in automated sleep staging used datasets without rigorous artifact correction, which likely inflated reported performance because the models were trained and tested on data that did not accurately reflect the signal quality challenges encountered in real-world deployment. This team implemented linear interpolation to correct for ectopic beats and outliers before extracting any heart rate variability features, treating pre-processing as a substantive methodological step rather than an afterthought. The decision to emphasize this is itself a meaningful contribution to best practice in the field. The second problem is the temporal dependency between sleep epochs. A standard machine learning classifier treats each input as an independent observation. It makes a classification decision for each epoch based solely on that epoch's features without any knowledge of what came before or after in the sequence. But a sleep epoch, typically a 30-second window of physiological data, is not independent of its neighbors. Sleep stages evolve over time according to biological constraints that govern normal sleep architecture, a transition from slow-wave sleep directly to wakefulness without passing through lighter non-rapid eye movement stages is physiologically atypical, and the context of surrounding epochs carries real information about what sleep stage a given epoch likely represents. If a model knows that the preceding three epochs were classified as rapid eye movement sleep, its confidence that the current epoch is also rapid eye movement sleep should be higher than if it had no context at all. Sleep architecture follows recognizable temporal patterns. The characteristic alternation of non-rapid eye movement and rapid eye movement sleep across the night, the concentration of slow wave sleep in the first half of the night, and rapid eye movement sleep in the second half, the transitions between stages that follow predictable probabilistic rules. Standard classifiers lack a mechanism to exploit this temporal structure, so they systematically discard potentially useful information right there in the sequence. To address this, the authors implemented a bidirectional long short-term memory architecture, a form of recurrent neural network that processes sequences in both forward and backward directions, allowing each epoch's classification to draw on both what preceded and what followed in the sequence. The bidirectional long short-term memory is architecturally well-suited to this problem. By processing the full night sequence rather than isolated epochs, it can capture the characteristic stage progressions and transitions that govern normal sleep architecture and use that broader temporal context to inform each individual epoch's classification. This is a theoretically motivated design choice grounded in a sound analysis of the problem structure, not a gratuitous application of deep learning to a domain where it is not needed. The dataset came from the PhysioNet Computing and Cardiology Challenge 2018, a publicly available repository comprising polysomnography recordings from 645 subjects, a substantial dataset by the standards of sleep research, where data collection is inherently labor-intensive. Time domain, frequency domain, and nonlinear heart rate variability features were extracted from the corrected electrocardiogram data for each 30-second epoch. The authors also included the epoch index, a simple integer indicating when in the night a given epoch occurs, as an additional training feature. This is a straightforward but clever inclusion. It serves as a proxy for the circadian phase, elapsed sleep pressure, and the expected distributional profile of sleep stages across the night, all of which modulate the prior probability of any given stage occurring at any given time. By including this feature, the model can learn that stage 3 non-rapid eye movement sleep is most likely during the first third of the night, and that rapid eye movement sleep dominates during the final hours, even when heart rate variability features alone are ambiguous. The authors compared two model architectures, the bidirectional long short-term memory neural network and a random forest classifier, an ensemble method that builds many individual decision trees from random subsets of features and training examples, then aggregates their predictions by majority vote. Random forests are well established in machine learning, particularly for structured tabular data, and they serve as a strong, interpretable, and robust benchmark that is not easily dismissed as a naive comparison. The results produced a counterintuitive finding. The random forest classifier outperformed the bidirectional long short-term memory network. The random forest achieved cross-validation accuracy of 79.6% with a standard deviation of 1.6%. The bidirectional long short-term memory model achieved 74.7% with a standard deviation of 1.05%. The superiority of the ensemble method over the architecture specifically designed to handle sequential dependencies is noteworthy, and the authors discuss it directly. The most plausible interpretation is that the combination of carefully engineered features and the temporal information captured by the epoch index provided the random forest with most of the useful contextual signal, substantially reducing the marginal benefit of the recurrent architecture. When a single interpretable feature, the epoch index, captures much of the temporal structure that a complex recurrent architecture would otherwise need to learn from the data, the advantage of that architecture is diminished. On a dataset of this size, the recurrent network may also have had fewer opportunities to realize its theoretical advantages than would be possible with a substantially larger training set. This is consistent with a broader pattern in the machine learning literature. Tree-based ensemble methods frequently remain competitive with neural architectures on tabular data when sample sizes are not extremely large and when informative features have been carefully constructed by domain experts. The random forest classifier was subsequently validated on an independent external dataset, a critical step that many classification studies omit, either because external data is unavailable or because researchers are insufficiently attentive to the distinction between validation and testing. The external validation data came from the Haaglanden Medischzentrum and comprised polysomnography recordings from 43 subjects who were entirely separate from the training population and contributed by a different clinical center. This external validation yielded an accuracy of 78.9%, a Cohen's kappa coefficient of 0.70, and a macro F1 score of 0.789. These metrics each capture something different and deserve brief explanation. Raw accuracy, the proportion of epochs correctly classified, is the simplest metric but can be misleading when classes are imbalanced, as they routinely are in sleep staging, where stage 2 non-rapid eye movement sleep predominates across the night. A naive classifier that simply predicted stage 2 for every epoch would achieve reasonable accuracy through base rate alone while providing no useful discrimination. Cohen's kappa adjusts for the agreement expected by chance alone, providing a more stringent assessment of genuine discriminative performance. A kappa of 0.70 falls in the range typically characterized as substantial agreement and is a meaningful result for a five-class problem. The macro F1 score, which computes precision and recall for each class separately and then averages them with equal weight, gives each sleep stage equal consideration regardless of how frequently it occurs, providing the most demanding assessment of performance across all five classes, including the rarer ones. A macro F1 of 0.789 across five classes using only electrocardiogram-derived features without any electroencephalographic data is a genuinely strong result. The authors also explicitly demonstrate that the pre-processing pipeline contributed to performance. Models trained on uncorrected data perform measurably worse, supporting the argument that ectopic beat correction and outlier removal are not optional refinements, but substantive determinants of how well heart rate variability features actually reflect the underlying autonomic states they are meant to represent. This has direct practical implications for any deployment context. Signal quality control cannot be an afterthought if the downstream application depends on accurate extraction of heart rate variability. There are important limitations to acknowledge. This is a retrospective classification study, and classification accuracy on benchmark datasets does not automatically translate to clinical utility in heterogeneous real-world populations with varied signal quality and diverse clinical characteristics. The subjects in both datasets are individuals who presented to clinical sleep facilities, which means they likely have higher rates of sleep-disordered breathing and other pathologies than the general population. A model trained on this population may not perform equally well on healthy individuals, on those without clinically significant sleep complaints, or on recordings from consumer-grade wearable devices with noisier, less reliable cardiac signals. The five-class staging problem is also inherently harder than simpler formulations. Clinically, distinguishing slow-wave sleep from other stages, which has implications for recovery monitoring and interventions that target deep sleep, may sometimes be sufficient, and targeted binary or three-class models would likely achieve substantially better performance on that narrower question. The external validation cohort of 43 subjects, while an important methodological step, is small enough that performance estimates carry meaningful statistical uncertainty. For clinicians and practitioners, heart rate variability-based automated sleep staging is advancing toward clinical viability as a population-level research tool and a screening instrument, but is not yet at the point where it should replace polysomnography for diagnostic purposes. Our second study moves from the sleep laboratory to the driver's seat and to a problem with direct and serious public safety implications. Driver fatigue is consistently identified as one of the leading contributors to road traffic accidents worldwide. Estimates from major road safety organizations suggest that fatigue-related crashes account for a substantial fraction of serious and fatal accidents, particularly on highways and in commercial vehicle settings where long uninterrupted driving is common. The challenge of fatigue detection is both practical and fundamentally physiological. Fatigue develops gradually across an exposure period. Its progression is reliably underestimated by the individual experiencing it, a phenomenon sometimes called fatigue blindness, and its outward behavioral manifestations, such as reduced reaction time, lane drifting, head nodding, and microsleeps, may not become detectable until impairment is already well established and the risk of accident is already high. Self-report measures have been developed and validated, but they require active engagement from the driver, are subject to the underestimation bias just described, and are entirely impractical to administer continuously during driving. The driver who most urgently needs to be told they are too fatigued to drive safely is precisely the driver least likely to accurately perceive and report that state. Physiological monitoring offers a potential path around these limitations. The electrocardiogram, particularly with the increasing availability of wearable devices capable of continuous cardiac monitoring, has attracted substantial research attention as a fatigue detection modality. Heart rate variability is a particularly plausible candidate marker because fatigue is associated with well-characterized autonomic shifts. Early fatigue is typically accompanied by increasing parasympathetic activity and reduced sympathetic tone, reflecting the shift toward restoration that precedes sleep. As fatigue deepens, the relationship becomes more complex, with dysregulation of the normal sympathetic-parasympathetic balance and deterioration of the complexity and regularity of cardiac dynamics. These shifts are, in principle, detectable from the heart rate variability signal, which is why the cardiac approach to fatigue detection has attracted the research investment it has. This study was published in the IAES International Journal of Artificial Intelligence and is titled Pre-Driving Fatigue Screening from Short-Term Heart Rate Variability with Subject-Independent Validation. The authors are Tia Haryanti, Eri Prasetyo-Wibowo, Wahyu Kusuma Raharja, Rosi Septiwahyuni, and Ilmiati Sari. The key design decision in this study is the focus on pre-driving screening rather than in-vehicle continuous monitoring during the drive. Most prior work has aimed to detect fatigue while the vehicle is already in motion, using sensors embedded in the vehicle, mounted on the steering wheel, or worn by the driver. The authors argue that screening before the drive begins may be both more practically achievable and fundamentally safer, because it allows a determination of fitness to drive before any risk is incurred. The occupational safety analogy is instructive. Airline pilots undergo pre-flight medical assessment. Heavy vehicle operators are required to maintain logs of rest periods and are subject to fitness for duty standards. Some high-risk industries conduct biological impairment testing before workers begin shifts. The rationale is the same in each case. If you can identify an individual who is not fit to perform a safety-critical task before they begin, you prevent the hazard rather than respond to it. A brief physiological measurement capable of flagging individuals who should not be operating a vehicle would provide a fundamentally different, more preventive kind of safety intervention than an alert system that engages only after dangerous behavior, lane departure, prolonged eyelid closure, reaction time failure, has already manifested. The study enrolled 99 participants, each contributing a single session of electrocardiogram recording taken before a driving simulation task. This cross-sectional design, one measurement per person rather than repeated sessions, means the data set captures between-person variation in fatigue levels at the time of testing, not within-person changes over time. This distinction matters for interpretation. The model is learning to distinguish more fatigued from less fatigued individuals at a single time point, not to track the progression of fatigue within an individual over the course of a session. Whether a model calibrated on between-person differences would also be sensitive to within-person fatigue accumulation over the course of a shift or a long drive is a separate empirical question that this design does not address. Fatigue labels were derived from the Karolinska Sleepiness Scale, a validated 9-point self-report instrument developed to assess subjective sleepiness in research contexts. The scale ranges from extremely alert, 1, to extremely sleepy, fighting sleep, with great effort to keep awake, 9. The primary binary classification threshold used in this study defined individuals as unfit to drive if their Karolinska Sleepiness Scale score was 7 or above, a threshold corresponding to sleepy, with difficulty keeping awake and effort to stay alert, which has been associated with measurable driving performance degradation in prior simulation research. The critical methodological decision, and the one that most distinguishes this study from a large body of prior work in physiological fatigue detection, is the use of subject-independent validation. A great deal of prior research in this area has trained models on data from a participant and tested them on other data from the same participant, a within-subject design that dramatically inflates apparent performance. The reason for the inflation is that the model in a within-subject design is not learning to detect fatigue in general. It is learning the idiosyncratic physiological fingerprint of a specific individual and using that fingerprint to predict their fatigue from new recordings of theirs. Since individual physiological patterns are stable across sessions regardless of fatigue state, A model with access to within-person data can achieve high accuracy by recognizing the person rather than detecting fatigue. A model trained this way will perform near chance on a new individual whose physiological fingerprint it has never seen. Leave one subject out cross-validation, implemented here, addresses this problem directly. The model trains on data from every participant except one, is tested on that held out individual's data, and this rotation continues until every participant has served once as the test case. Reported performance under this scheme reflects genuine generalization to previously unseen individuals, the only performance metric that matters for real-world deployment. Heart rate variability features were extracted from 30-second electrocardiogram recordings. This window duration was chosen for practical feasibility. 30 seconds is brief enough to serve as a realistic pre-driving screening procedure, yet long enough to capture at least some meaningful heart rate variability. Standard time domain indices, frequency domain spectral measures, and nonlinear metrics were computed from each recording. A logistic regression model, one of the most interpretable and statistically principled classification methods available, was selected as the classifier. Probability calibration was applied using Platt scaling, which adjusts the raw model output probabilities so that stated confidence levels correspond to observed frequencies of correct predictions. Well-calibrated probabilities are important for the triage application the authors propose, where the confidence level of the prediction needs to meaningfully distinguish clearly fit, clearly non-fit, and uncertain cases. The model's discrimination performance was modest, but not negligible. The area under the receiver operating characteristic curve was 0.687, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.591 to 0.776. To put this in context, an area under the curve of 0.5 represents chance performance, and values above 0.7 are sometimes described as acceptable for screening purposes in clinical literature, though standards vary by application. The confidence interval here is wide, reflecting the uncertainty arising from a sample of 99 using a leave one subject out scheme. The precision recall area under the curve was 0.621, and the Breyer score measuring calibration quality was 0.200. These figures indicate a model with modest but real discriminative ability, better than chance calibration, and substantial uncertainty, all of which should be honestly represented in any deployment context. The operating threshold of 0.255 was chosen to prioritize sensitivity at the expense of specificity. This is the right trade-off for a safety screening application, and the authors are explicit about the reasoning. For a pre-driving safety screen, the consequential error is a false negative, failing to flag a fatigued individual who then drives and causes harm. A false positive, flagging an alert individual as potentially fatigued, results in inconvenience, a secondary check, or a delay, which are real but manageable costs and orders of magnitude less serious than a fatigue-related crash. Accepting a high false positive rate to achieve a near zero false negative rate is a principal design choice in this context. At the 0.255 threshold, sensitivity reached 1.000. Every fatigued individual in the validation set was correctly identified as non-fit, with no missed cases. Specificity was 0.091, meaning the model flagged the substantial majority of non-fatigued individuals as potentially non-fit. The proposed three-tier triage scheme, fit, requiring review, non-fit, addresses this operationally by routing borderline cases to a secondary step rather than to automatic exclusion, thereby managing the false positive burden at the cost of additional processing time for uncertain cases. The limitations here are substantive. The data set is small, 99 participants, each with a single session. The wide confidence interval on the area under the curve reflects genuine statistical uncertainty, and reported performance metrics should be understood as preliminary estimates rather than established values. The Karolinska sleepiness scale threshold of 7 or above, used as a proxy for driving unfitness, has not been independently validated in this specific population or in the pre-driving context. The scale was developed and validated in different research settings and its calibration as a fitness to drive criterion involves assumptions that have not been fully tested. The 30-second recording window is practically attractive, but methodologically constraining. Frequency domain heart rate variability metrics computed from 30-second windows are substantially less stable and reliable than those from the standard 5-minute windows recommended in consensus guidelines, and the information available to any classifier is correspondingly limited. The very low specificity is a real operational problem. In any practical deployment, a system that flags 90% of unimpaired drivers will rapidly generate user resistance, compliance failures, and organizational pressure to abandon or circumvent the screening. The triage scheme mitigates this somewhat, but does not resolve it. This is a cross-sectional study with an observational design. The associations between short-term heart rate variability features and Karolinska sleepiness scale ratings observed here are between measures taken at a single time point in a specific sample and do not establish a causal or mechanistic relationship between heart rate variability and fatigue-related driving risk. The study is best understood as a carefully designed proof of concept, demonstrating that 32-second heart rate variability recordings convey some signal about the pre-driving fatigue state when evaluated under subject-independent conditions, and proposing a triage framework for managing the inherent uncertainty of brief physiological screening measurements. That is a meaningful contribution, even with all the caveats, and it identifies the specific gaps that subsequent better-powered work would need to fill. We turn now to a methodological study, one that does not examine a clinical population or a real-world application, but asks a more fundamental question about the tools we use to analyze heart rate variability. How do different entropy measures compare when applied to the same data? This kind of head-to-head methodological evaluation matters more than it might initially seem. The choice of entropy measure is not purely a technical matter. It has downstream consequences for what signals we detect, what differences we report, how our findings compare to prior literature, and ultimately what conclusions clinicians and researchers draw from heart rate variability analyses. A field that uses multiple entropy measures inconsistently without systematic evidence of how they compare is harder to interpret and replicate. Rigorous benchmarking studies like this one serve the whole community by providing evidence-based guidance on which tools perform best and under what conditions. The core motivation for entropy analysis in heart rate variability research is the observation that healthy cardiac dynamics are complex in a specific sense. They exhibit structured irregularity, neither fully predictable nor fully random, that reflects the adaptive capacity of the autonomic nervous system to modulate cardiac output across a wide range of continuously changing demands. This complexity is not noise. It is physiologically meaningful. A heart that beats at a perfectly regular rate lacks the flexibility to respond rapidly to changing demands. A heart that beats in a completely disorganized pattern lacks the coherent regulation needed for efficient function. Healthy cardiac dynamics occupy a middle ground characterized by complexity across multiple timescales, and this complexity changes in characteristic ways in response to disease, aging, psychological stress, and physiological challenge. Entropy measures are designed to quantify this complexity in ways that linear heart rate variability metrics, which characterize the amplitude and frequency distribution of fluctuations but not their complexity, fundamentally cannot. Sample entropy and approximate entropy are the established workhorses of this approach and have been applied in hundreds of published studies across conditions ranging from cardiac disease and diabetes to psychological stress and athletic training. Their behavior is reasonably well characterized, and their relationship to clinical outcomes has been studied extensively. Permutation entropy offers a computationally efficient alternative that is based on the relative ordering of values within successive windows of the signal rather than on their absolute magnitudes, making it more robust to certain kinds of amplitude noise and artifacts. And bubble entropy is the newcomer in this comparison, theoretically motivated with some early evidence of utility, but without the systematic benchmarking that would allow confident conclusions about where it stands relative to established alternatives. This study was published in Entropy and is titled Evaluation of Bubble Entropy Using Heart Rate Variability. The authors are Dimitrios Platakis, Roberto Sassi, and George Manis. Bubble entropy gets both its name and its conceptual foundation from the bubble sort algorithm, a classical sorting procedure from computer science. Bubble sort works by repeatedly stepping through a list of elements, comparing each adjacent pair, and swapping them if they are out of order. This process repeats until the entire list is sorted. The key quantity of interest is the number of swaps required to complete the sorting. A list that is nearly sorted requires very few swaps, while a maximally disordered list requires the maximum possible number. The number of swaps is therefore a measure of the degree of ordering or disorder in the original sequence. Bubble entropy applies this intuition to physiological time series. It constructs vectors from successive segments of the signal in an embedding space of dimension m, and counts the work required to sort these vectors, using this count as a measure of the complexity or irregularity of the underlying dynamics. The result is a complexity measure grounded in a physically interpretable procedure, the sorting work, rather than in a purely statistical abstraction. The theoretical advantage that most clearly distinguishes bubble entropy from sample entropy warrants careful attention, as it is a genuine methodological strength. Sample entropy, despite its widespread use, has a well-recognized sensitivity to the choice of a tolerance parameter, a threshold that determines whether two template patterns within the time series are considered sufficiently similar to count as a match when computing the entropy value. The value of this tolerance parameter is conventionally set as a fixed multiple of the signal's standard deviation, but this convention is empirical rather than principled. It was chosen based on practical experience rather than derived from the mathematics of the measure, and the optimal value can differ substantially across signal types, recording conditions, pre-processing choices, and pathological states. Studies that use different tolerance values, even when they follow published conventions, may report meaningfully different entropy values for the same underlying physiology, contributing to heterogeneity across the literature and making cross-study comparisons unreliable. Bubble entropy sidesteps this problem entirely by eliminating the tolerance parameter from its formulation. The computation does not require specifying any threshold, which means results from different studies and analytical pipelines should be directly comparable, whereas sample entropy results are not. Eliminating an arbitrary free parameter is a meaningful methodological improvement, not merely a technical convenience. The comparison was conducted on RR interval time series, the sequential beat-to-beat interval data from which all standard heart rate variability metrics are derived. The dataset comprised recordings from two groups: healthy individuals in normal sinus rhythm and cardiac patients with established pathological conditions that alter autonomic function and cardiac dynamics. This choice of comparison groups is appropriate for a benchmarking study because the differences in cardiac complexity between these populations are large enough to provide a stringent test of each entropy measure's discriminative power. Four machine learning classifiers were applied to features derived from each entropy measure: k-nearest neighbors, which classifies a new observation based on the majority class among its nearest neighbors in the feature space; support vector machines, which identify the maximum margin boundary between classes and are well suited to high-dimensional feature spaces; logistic regression, which models the log odds of class membership as a linear function of the features; and Gaussian naive Bayes, which applies Bayesian classification under the simplifying assumption that features are normally distributed and conditionally independent. The deliberate use of four different classifiers is an important design choice because it guards against a common confound in classifier-based evaluations: the possibility that results reflect the particular strengths or weaknesses of a single algorithm, rather than genuine differences in the discriminative content of the entropy measures themselves. If one entropy measure consistently outperforms others across all four classifiers, which differ substantially in their mathematical properties and assumptions, the consistency is much stronger evidence of genuine superiority than a performance advantage with a single classifier. Feature importance rankings were computed using multiple methods as an additional classifier-independent approach to assessing discriminative value. These rankings address a different but complementary question. Not how accurately a trained model can separate the groups using this measure, but how much information does this measure carry about which group a given signal belongs to? High rankings on multiple importance metrics support the interpretation that the entropy measure is genuinely capturing meaningful differences in cardiac dynamics rather than performing well for algorithmic reasons that may not generalize. The results were consistent across classifier types, evaluation metrics, and importance ranking methods. Bubble entropy achieved higher classification accuracy than sample entropy, approximate entropy, and permutation entropy in this discrimination task. Bubble entropy features ranked higher than those of the competing measures across the importance analyses as well. The convergence of evidence across multiple methodologically distinct evaluation approaches strengthens the conclusion and makes it less likely to be an artifact of any single analytical choice. Several interpretive caveats are important and should be stated directly. This study evaluated entropy measures in a single binary classification context, healthy versus cardiac patient, and demonstrated that bubble entropy performs better in this specific comparison. But performance in one comparison does not establish superiority across all applications. A complexity measure that excels at distinguishing healthy from pathological may or may not be equally superior at tracking longitudinal changes within a patient over time, at predicting outcomes along a continuous severity spectrum, at distinguishing among different types of cardiac pathology from each other, or at detecting the subtle autonomic perturbations relevant to athlete monitoring or psychological stress research. Each of these applications may weigh different aspects of cardiac complexity and may be more or less sensitive to the specific features captured by bubble entropy. Bubble entropy has a considerably smaller literature base than sample entropy or approximate entropy, which means there is less accumulated empirical knowledge about its behavior across different signal types, recording durations, artifact levels, pre-processing choices, and clinical contexts. The absence of a tolerance parameter is a theoretical advantage, but the behavior of bubble entropy under varying embedding dimensions and signal lengths, conditions that can substantially affect entropy estimates for all measures, needs to be characterized over a wider empirical range before its properties are fully understood. For researchers, this study provides a carefully executed and methodologically rigorous benchmark and a clear argument for including bubble entropy in future comparative analyses. For practitioners working in settings where the sensitivity of sample entropy's tolerance parameter has been an ongoing concern, bubble entropy deserves serious consideration as an alternative. It is not yet positioned to replace established measures in settings where the accumulated literature base and clinical validation of sample entropy matter, but it is a credible and theoretically well-grounded addition to the nonlinear heart rate variability toolkit. Now let's pause for a word from the sponsor that makes this show possible. This week's episode is brought to you by Optimal HRV. The Optimal HRV app guides you through a standardized morning measurement protocol, building a reliable longitudinal baseline that makes tracking meaningful. Beyond passive monitoring, it includes biofeedback tools for real-time training in autonomic regulation, actively working with your nervous system, not just observing it. Optimal HRV is also hosting two upcoming professional development opportunities. The first is a BCIA aligned heart rate variability biofeedback training led by Dr. Inna Kazan, carrying 16 APA continuing education credits, a rigorous foundation for clinicians looking to integrate heart rate variability biofeedback into practice. The second is a course on ethical principles and practice standards in clinical biofeedback, also BCIA aligned, ideal for those pursuing certification or wanting a thorough grounding in professional standards. Registration links for both are in the show notes. Visit Optimal HRV to learn more. Our fourth study moves into territory that is both technically sophisticated and clinically urgent, predicting mortality from heart rate variability signals using deep learning. Mortality risk stratification, identifying which patients face elevated risk of death, particularly from cardiac causes, is one of the most consequential problems in cardiovascular medicine. The clinical stakes are direct. Accurate risk stratification informs the intensity of monitoring, the urgency of intervention, the appropriateness of advanced therapies, and the allocation of limited clinical resources. A patient whose risk is underestimated may not receive the timely intervention that could prevent death. A patient whose risk is overestimated may be subjected to aggressive treatments whose costs and side effects are not justified by their prognosis. Better tools for risk stratification are therefore not merely of academic interest. They translate directly into decisions with implications for patient survival. Heart rate variability has been studied as a prognostic marker for over four decades, and the evidence base is substantial. Reduced heart rate variability is one of the most consistently replicated predictors of adverse cardiovascular outcomes across diverse populations and clinical contexts. The physiological rationale is clear and mechanistically grounded. Depressed heart rate variability reflects impaired autonomic modulation of the heart, which in turn reflects the severity of the underlying cardiac disease, the degree to which the autonomic nervous system has lost its capacity to respond flexibly to physiological demands, and the erosion of the regulatory reserve that separates the patient from decompensation. Post-myocardial infarction patients with markedly reduced heart rate variability have substantially elevated mortality risk. Patients with chronic heart failure show progressive reduction in heart rate variability as disease severity worsens and prognosis deteriorates. Patients with diabetic autonomic neuropathy, in whom heart rate variability is blunted across the full measurement range, face elevated cardiovascular mortality independently of other risk factors. These associations have held up across studies, across populations, and across measurement approaches in a way that few prognostic markers can match. But there is a growing recognition that the standard linear heart rate variability metrics, the time domain and frequency domain measures that dominate both clinical research and the handful of clinical applications where heart rate variability is formally used, may not capture all of the prognostically relevant information in the cardiac signal. Standard measures describe the amplitude and spectral distribution of heart rate fluctuations within specific time windows and frequency bands. They do not characterize how those fluctuations are organized across timescales, whether the scaling behavior of the signal reflects normal, fractal-like dynamics, or disease-associated distortions of that structure, or how the statistical properties of the variability change as you examine it at progressively longer temporal resolutions. This multi-scale organizational structure of cardiac dynamics has been recognized as biologically important since the development of detrended fluctuation analysis in the 1990s, and it has been linked both theoretically and empirically to the integrity of autonomic regulation. The challenge has been to characterize it in ways that are both computationally tractable and clinically informative. This study was published in IEEE Transactions on Biomedical Engineering and is titled Extending Multiscale Characterization of Heart Rate Variability via Deep Learning for Mortality Risk Prediction. The authors are Juonji S. Cruz, Yudai Fujimoto, Sinyoung Lee, Eiichi Watanabe, and Ken Kiyono. The methodological innovation centers on detrended moving average analysis combined with convolutional neural networks, and understanding what this combination does requires understanding both components. Detrended moving average analysis is a technique for characterizing scaling properties across timescales. Rather than computing statistical summaries within fixed windows, it examines how the residual fluctuations of the signal, after the local mean trend has been removed at each timescale, change as the analysis timescale increases. By doing this across a continuous range of timescales, it generates a scaling curve, a plot of the characteristic amplitude of fluctuations as a function of the timescale at which those fluctuations are observed. In a signal with healthy fractal organization, this curve follows a characteristic power law slope across a range of timescales. Disease and autonomic impairment alter the slope, introduce breaks in the scaling behavior, or otherwise distort the power law relationship in ways that reflect the nature and severity of the underlying physiological disruption. Detrended moving average analysis provides a principled, theory-grounded way to characterize all of these features simultaneously in a single curve. The study population comprised 916 survivors and 70 non-survivors identified within a cohort with 24-hour Holter electrocardiogram recordings. detrended moving average scaling curves were computed from 2-hour overlapping windows across these recordings, yielding a detailed characterization of each patient's cardiac scaling dynamics across multiple time of day contexts. Rather than then applying a pre-specified formula to the scaling curves to extract features for prediction, which would require prior theoretical knowledge about exactly which features of the curve carry the most prognostic information, the authors trained a convolutional neural network directly on the scaling curves. Convolutional neural networks are architecturally designed to learn local patterns and hierarchical structures from their inputs. They apply learned filters at multiple scales, combining local pattern recognition with global structural understanding. Applied to detrended moving average curves, this allows the network to discover which aspects of the scaling behavior predict mortality without requiring researchers to specify in advance which features should matter. The primary discrimination result was an area under the receiver operating characteristic curve of 0.72 for daytime recordings, with an adjusted hazard ratio of 2.129, meaning that individuals whose scaling curve patterns were classified as high risk by the model experienced roughly twice the rate of death during follow-up compared to those classified as low risk after adjustment. This represents an improvement over models that use standard heart rate variability features and clinical variables alone, which is the key comparison for assessing whether the multi-scale approach provides information beyond what conventional analysis already captures. A secondary finding of particular conceptual importance was the emergence of two distinct patient phenotypes based on detrended moving average scaling patterns. Group 1 was characterized by dominant short-term scaling dynamics, and in non-survivors from this group, the slopes of the scaling curve in the short-term range were reduced relative to survivors, suggesting that the impairment of autonomic adaptability in these patients was primarily manifested at rapid timescales. Group 2 showed an earlier transition between short and long-term scaling behavior. The breakpoint in the scaling curve occurred at shorter timescales, and among non-survivors from this group, reduced long-term slopes were the stronger predictor of mortality. The prognostic relevance of scaling dynamics, in other words, differs between these two physiological phenotypes. A patient whose primary autonomic impairment affects short-term regulation faces a different prognostic signature than one whose impairment affects long-term organization, and a single aggregate heart rate variability metric will conflate these patients, averaging over their different relationships between dynamics and mortality risk. Integrated gradients analysis was applied to interpret the neural network's predictions by attributing model outputs to specific input features. This revealed which timescales in the detrended moving average curve most strongly drove mortality predictions, providing mechanistic anchoring alongside predictive performance. The limitations require a clear statement. The class imbalance, 916 survivors against 70 non-survivors, is substantial and poses real challenges for model training, validation, and interpretation. With only 70 non-survivors, the stability of any learned predictive model is constrained, and the performance estimates in the paper carry uncertainty that is difficult to fully quantify in retrospective observational data. The study is retrospective. The associations between detrended moving average patterns and mortality cannot be interpreted as causal, and the study population is drawn from a single clinical center. Prospective validation in independent, diverse cohorts is required before these methods can inform clinical decision making. Deep learning models for clinical prediction remain difficult to fully audit, and their deployment would require regulatory evaluation and implementation research that go well beyond what a single academic study can establish. This study represents a compelling and technically sophisticated proof of concept for a research direction that is genuinely worth pursuing. And it does not yet represent a clinical tool. Our fifth and final study this week takes us in a different direction, from mortality prediction in cardiac populations to autonomic function in a rare neurodevelopmental genetic condition. Williams syndrome is caused by a microdeletion on the long arm of chromosome 7 and affects approximately 1 in 10,000 individuals. The deletion removes a cluster of approximately 26 to 28 genes, and the resulting syndrome has a distinctive and well-characterized phenotype that has been extensively studied in developmental neuroscience, clinical genetics, and cardiology.